picks or picks.
Sonic Tales Season 6, our picks.
It's going to be really exciting because you've got a chance, if you missed them the first time around, to listen to some of our very best plays.
Join us as we share some of our favourite original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Good evening and welcome to Sonic Tales, the show that brings you original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio. I'm your host, Tegan Nichols, and on tonight's show, we here at Sonic Tales will be presenting one of our favourite brand new plays written by one of our favourite writers to work with, Sydney-based playwright and Augie Award winner Donna Abella. During the last few episodes of Sonic Tales, we've been sharing some of our favourite picks from our past seasons of the project. But we simply could not wait to share this new production with you, and so we've included it as our favourite pick of our new collection. The play is entitled Spirit, and takes place in a processing centre on Christmas Island. It is here that the bureaucratic and officious Vera faces off with a severely persistent and positive Albert in the interview that could grant or reject his claim for asylum. Alice Livingston and Craig Minode rise and fall in a performance that is both tense and tender, and despite being written for the stage back in 2007, the themes of spirit couldn't be more relevant to the audience of today. I was lucky enough to work on the sound design for Spirit, and to have Donna Abella join me here at Eastside to discuss her piece more deeply.
When I was, you know, working in refugee communities in the 90s, we didn't know much as a nation about the refugee journey. Whereas now I think we know a lot more about the refugee journey, but we haven't really found the solution for it. It's kind of interesting that this sort of story that I've been interested in still has currency and is probably more relevant because it's more in our day-to-day psyche.
Be sure to stay tuned as we share more of that interview with Donna later on in the show. But first, we here at Sonic Tales proudly present to you one of our favourite picks. We hope you enjoy it. Spirit by Donna Abella, performed by Alice Livingston and Craig Minode.
Find my wife and hold her face and fall into her eyes that will die soon like mine if we don't see what freedom looks like.
This isn't helping.
Vera!
Were you detained? Were you tortured?
The men are
Did
in one heart. The women
torture?
And children are behind windows we can't see through. But we are one people with no guns who crossed the same sea, fought the same spirit. So why? Why can families not start the party that has to happen?
You are here to answer my questions.
I'm here to live the opposite of war. In a place safe enough to rejoice in.
War. Then your life was threatened.
But Tuhan Jesus sent his cross of protection and delivered us from spirits that wished us dead.
Spirits?
Albert, are you happy to be alive? Ask me this.
Is spirit a code word?
Ask me. If your kids run now to this room, what would you do?
Is it an ironic reference to troops?
I would turn upside down my kids and kiss the bottom of their feet until they squeal and kick and we fall to the floor because when I thought they were dead but found them alive, I did this. And I want to do it again and throw them dizzy in the air and tell my wife that she is beauty and I love her and her mother and her sisters.
Were you harassed?
Vera!
Beaten?
On this island, people want to be good to
Afraid?
Us.
Afraid?
They put baskets for the children on the step with dolls for them and little bears and flowers and fruit.
Answer
too.
The question!
Don't let the kids cry at what they can't have. Unlock the door! Let them run with arms
Albert.
Flying and let them reach up to your waist and play on your back and shout, Auntie, in your ear so your spine curls like a fern.
Are you stupid?
Let's feel glad with all the friendly people here. I give thanks to your government and thanks to God with flowers and praise him for defeating the Huntu Laut.
Huntu Laut?
Yes.
How do you spell that?
They grabbed our longboat.
Militia.
They destroy people being free.
A death squad.
Black ghosts. They try to drown us. We thought many times dead. But Tuhaniasus.
Ghosts?
He reached us in a dream.
Who?
Tuhaniasus.
Albert, I'm really on a very tight
schedule.
This
will kill me.
What? What will?
Vera, did you ever feel happiness too big just for you? Happiness that needs a whole village to exist. My happiness needs light from fishermen's bonfires and women dressed in dresses that sing. It needs kisses cold with ice cream and sand tumbled with kids and wet dogs and parrots chasing all the colours coming from the going sun. If it's inside just me, it will kill me, Vera. Explode in me if I can't find my...
You're not welcome here yet. People who are desperate, appropriately petrified and hopeless, I report on them. Not on people obsessed with some cosmic rescue from spirits, which is a waste, frankly, of my time, Albert, because claims, your claim for asylum, is pretty bloody not possible to base a claim on ghosts. So contemplating a party is actually pretty deluded, insulting even, because you're obliged, actually, immediately legally obliged to sit down right now and answer only the questions I ask you. Refusing repeatedly, it's usually deemed obstructive, and obstructive people, ministers think they pose a threat, think they've breached our border as an act of war, actually, and tend to treat them accordingly rather harshly. Do you understand? I hate the heat. I'm from down south, so in the tropics, people from the south... We overheat a bit, which is normal if you're from the south, because we're not used to all the build-up. Sit down, please. You must be... Are there enough chairs in your compound? Is it clean? It's big enough, isn't it? Isn't it hot? I'm staying in the motel. There's no air conditioning there either. The owners have given up, I think. Have stopping the jungle from claiming the place. It's got eyes, have you noticed? Eyes like spiders that don't blink. And it sort of mesmerises you as leaf by vine by lizard it creeps closer, trying to close the gap. In the motel, it's moving in like a complimentary roommate that I really don't need at all. I mean, branches above the bath scratch at your back. Frogs float in the toilet. Crabs steal your keys. It's very... It's familiar. It's too... I think you should pick up that chair.
In our jungle, there are killings. A hunt for protesters who want the military to go home.
Right.
It is an everyday thing.
Good.
So, every day we swallowed our names. Under pressure from soldiers, we hid from them and feared for our homes. We built the longboat in the dark and smuggled a motor into the jungle and all the petrol we could.
You were targeted.
Even on the sea. For 1 week, no name passed our lips.
You're an activist?
But when the Huntu Laut were drowning us, a girl had a dream. Her face was like light, so we knew the dream was truth. She said, Uncle Tuhaniasus, I see him. He holds your two sons. Her words in my heart ripped it like bullets. The names I gave my sons and smothered in the jungle to be safe. I screamed their names and screamed because I thought they were in heaven dead. I had to hold their bodies, but the spirits were trying to sink us.
Fuck the spirits.
They dived up like whales and down, making a flood in the boat above my knees. The motor broke, and they tossed the boat to make us sick, too weak to hold on. I crashed into people bleeding and cut, and I almost fell out. The spirits grabbed me and pulled my head into the water down. Down, taken down, to hell with us. Their strength was endless. I thought I was dead too, but I forced my head up. At the end of the boat, I saw my sons, safe, chest to chest, sleeping, holding each other. Their arms were crossed like this.
What are you doing? Let me go!
They were crossed like this. They were protected. Not dead.
You've killed people.
When I saw this blessing, the spirit sank.
You're some rent-a-thug shithead, aren't you? Who's intimidated people.
The sea fell flat.
Ambushed
and
stabbed people.
The motor started. We saw land 10 hours away from us.
Can't you?
This big, great day, God has created it. A party is a must that has to happen.
Right.
Vera, loudly put your name on your lips.
Pick up that chair.
In West Papua, people die for such things.
I don't care.
I have seen friends shot. With my own eyes, I've witnessed this. But Vera, we live alive now and safe, so be free with us. Let us speak our good story first before the story of our bad.
Your story, Albert, is about to go to shit. Because there's a chance, every chance, that you'll all be dumped on some Pacific Island slag heap. Forgotten. Left to rot. Left to fend for yourself when the seas rise and the island starts to sink into the clutches of those spirits who should have killed you all when they had the chance.
Nothing don't come this far. Things warp and things, and without air conditioning, it's really. Can you hear that drone under the cicadas? I thought, heat. That's the sound heat makes. But it's not. It's the sound of plants thinking. Thinking.
Why aren't you hopeless?
They want everyone dead with them.
Who?
The Hantu lot. So they leap at boats like bulls with a temper that doesn't stop.
Why are they like that?
They hate. Scared their death away. So they live bitter now, on the bottom of the sea, lost in no light.
I...
Sit.
Yes. What they're doing, the Hantu lot, makes sense. I mean, if you were exiled, stuck in a soulless hellhole and... Above you, there was a forbidden, happy planet of loving couples and families and kids rubbing salt into your misery. And if you knew absolutely no cosmic rescue was coming for you, you'd need peace. So logically, that's what you'd do. Those kids, couples, families, you'd destroy them, infect them with hate, hate rancid enough to overpower their death. Rebirth, eternity, whatever. And that's fair, that's equal, isn't it? Everyone condemned, like you. Exiled forever from the things inside you that once used to be so good.
I have sons who didn't die. And a wife and friends to make a new life with. So Vera, let's jump off the jetty and be free in the water. Away from the bad things that can happen.
Why?
Because a hand with much love in it brought our happiness to you.
My motel room, it's... It gets blasting sun from the west and the aircon's dead, but... I mean, there's so many of you, 40, I think, or more. And if you party on the beach, not cleared yet, not processed, the media will have a total. All over Australia, front page pictures. And my career, my job, I think I could be charged with something, actually. So nothing in public. But the bedspread's brown in my room and the carpet's brown and the fly screens look half-eaten. But it's maybe okay for an hour. Just you and your wife.
My kids.
Of course.
And the sisters of my wife.
Maybe. The others will be at the pub cooling off all night because up here they air-condition beer, apparently. Next time, come aground in Hobart, okay? I'll leave the pub early, have an early night. Go and get your boys and...
And every father and uncle.
Well...
Every child.
A few.
Everyone who crossed.
Not too many. And then, if you want, not in front of cameras, you can hold faces and kiss feet and thank God or whatever and be happy.
This happiness needs a whole village to exist.
Okay, God, all right, but quietly. Otherwise, I think the politics of... It's very delicate. Mishandled an international incident might...
All of us. With Vera, too.
Only in my room. Nowhere else. I'm serious.
After the good party, the bad must come next.
You'll do the interview.
There was a crackdown. Guns and tear gas.
Albert. Oh. I'm sorry. Welcome.
Spirit by Donna Abella. Performed by Alice Livingston and Craig Minode. Sound design by Tegan Nichols. And produced for Eastside Radio by Jill Folsom.
Season 6.
Sonic Tales.
Sonic Tales Season 6.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Sonic Tales Season 6. Our picks.
The only show devoted to bringing you Australian radio play.
Hi, Donna Abella. Welcome. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. So, Spirit, the audience, they've just heard it. With where did it start for you, Spirit?
Spirit had two starting points. One is I'm part of a group called Seven On, which is an alliance of playwrights. And we champion playwrights and support each other's work, and we also initiate projects for ourselves. And our first project was we were literally in a pub at Paddington down the road, and we put Maslow's hierarchy of needs on a piece of paper, cut them up and put them in a hat, and we pulled them out. So for those who don't know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about, it was a theory I think from the 60s, somebody out there might correct me if I'm wrong, but looking at our hierarchy of needs going from food, shelter, sex, belonging, and all the way through to transcendence. I was very fortunate in that I picked out transcendence, and the idea was to write a 10-minute play about, yeah, so there were the seven needs and there were seven of us. And so we were to write a suite of plays, each taking one of those needs. And I pulled out self-transcendence, or spirit, as it became known. So it was a bit of a challenge to, you know, bring someone to a self-actualized state in a 10-minute play. So it was a bit of a big brief.
Wow. So, I mean, that's a pretty broad topic in a way. How did you come up with expressing that notion through two characters on Christmas Island, you know, with this push and pull, trying to basically, one seeking asylum and the other having to deal with the process of that. How did that come about?
Well, when we were giving labels to the hierarchy of needs, and I got, we called it mind spirit. So there's self-actualization or self-transcendence. I mean, all the psychological papers use different words to talk about that. But amongst ourselves, when we were categorizing them into seven, I was given, it came spirit. So spirit was what we called the thing that I was to write to and about. And so what the connection then to the story was, at the time there were 42 asylum seekers from West Papua who were landing on our northern shores. And I came across a story in some of the media reports about how the student leaders were part of their reporting of their experience of crossing the Arafura Sea was the sense that black spirits were trying to drown them. So waves were like black spirits and they were literally trying to be drowned. So there was the connection between spirit, the hierarchy, the highest need of humans, and then there was, you know, just sort of something in the paper a lot about this word spirit and black spirit and things like that. And then I started to develop a character who had, like, lost her spirit. So if you think of the character of Vera, she's kind of soulless. She's just sort of become completely joyless and completely resentful. And part of what she's doing in the play for me, he wants the good story before the bad. He wants the party before I'll tell you my horrible story of being caught up in, you know, whatever was going on over, you know, being attacked by militia or whatever his story is. And she just wants to process him and get him out of the way. She doesn't really want any emotion. She doesn't want joy. She doesn't really want heartache, but she'll kind of write it down on her form just to get him processed and out of her life. So for me, it's kind of about how you regain your spirit. Like, where's the door to your spirit? And so the irony that I was working on was that, you know, somebody who has every right to be so angry with the world because he's had to flee his country, he's seen people die, he's having to start life in a new land, whether or not Australia accepts him and all of that. So he's got every right to be unhappy, but he's the happy one. Whereas Vera's got safety and a home and a job and all of those things, and she's completely unhappy. And so it's kind of a reverse, I'm sort of reversing the order there, where he kind of helps her revive her spirit by helping her to revive her priorities. It's very much in the writing that I find the rhythm of what it is that I'm writing. And there are a couple of places in spirit where they do start to butt heads, and they basically butt heads because he is a resistance fighter. He's the leader of these people who fled their country, and he's a resistance fighter. So what I was doing is I was looking at the idea of resistance per se. So he resists her negativity. So she keeps coming back to him and saying, you know, just, you know, I'm not giving you a party. I just want you to do this. The country might not even let you in because you're telling me stories about ghosts and I can't actually process this information. And he's just absolutely, he won't take her misery on board. He just resists and resists and resists and resists. And so there's a few points in the play where she just can't bear that because it's starting to expose her own, she's starting to confront her own lack of joy. And so then there are the points in the play where she snaps and then she realises, oh, that was really overboard. And then she backtracks and then starts to, you know, then the jungle sounds start to come in and she starts to be aware of how kind of lost she is in a sense.
The language that you've written for Albert, is there a very elaborate sort of, you know, image-based way of speaking. Was that a deliberate choice to give him this very, you know, distinct kind of?
Yes. Yeah. There's a few reasons. I tend to be a believer in the fact that I think theatre, language that works best in theatre is language that offers you images, because it's, you can't rewind it like you can on television. You know, you can't replay the DVD. So for me, language that is concrete and robust and vivid is language that lives with an audience member like an afterglow. So I do like to use very concrete, evocative images that can live in an audience's mind. So that's sort of something I do anyway. But in terms of how he speaks, I'm very aware in my work. I've worked in, you know, multicultural theatre and cross-cultural theatre, you know, a lot, particularly in my early years as a playwright. But I write about cultural clash and cultural negotiation. They're themes that I really care about, but I don't often get access to the community I want to write about. So I didn't know any West Papuans, and the West Papuans who came out during that particular wave of asylum seeking, they settled in Melbourne. And I had a deadline. So it's like, okay, well, I need to create a language that is not the language of somebody who has English as their first language. Mm. I'm not interested in realism. So I didn't feel the need to, you know, really sit down with West Papuans and approximate their language, because the thing that happens there, that if you're working with someone who's speaking their third or fourth language, the English is, people would call it broken English, whereas I tend to think it's very creative English. I mean, they're still making beautiful meaning, even if they, you know, aren't using the grammar as we understand it and they're missing words and putting other words in. I still think that makes beautiful other meanings. Yeah. But the problem is, on paper, that often makes a character just look silly or dumb, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's really difficult when you're not working with people from the culture when you're developing the language. And I'm not working naturalistically anyway, so I don't, you know, like even the way Vera talks is not really the way we talk. I mean, it's a slightly heightened English that she's speaking. And so what I did with him, I just wanted to create a sense of, this is someone not speaking their first language. That was the thing that I wanted to create mostly. And so his syntax is very loose compared to Vera. And there's a sense, I think, in the language that he's tripping over his own joy. And so, you know, so a lot of the images kind of run together, and the words kind of run together as well. So I was really going for that kind of like irrepressible quality within him, and trying to capture that in the language.
Do you remember when you first wrote it?
Mm.
Do you know what year that was?
2007.
2007.
Mm.
When you wrote it, did you think now in 2015 it would be so topical?
Oh, look, it's really crazy. I mean, I've been a playwright for a really long time. And I wrote my first play about refugees and with refugees in 1991. And it's really interesting that 2015, these topics are, you know, as important. They're probably more important, because I think when I was, you know, working in refugee communities in the 90s, it was part of the community arts movement, and it was kind of a new thing that we were doing. And we didn't know much as a nation about the refugee journey. Whereas now I think we know a lot more about the refugee journey, but we haven't really found the solution for it. And we haven't, you know, appropriately kind of addressed what is a global issue. Mm. So, I mean, I'm really happy that a play that I wrote 7 years ago, even though it's a different community, I mean, it's West Papuan in the play, but it could really be Iraqi, it really could be Afghani. I mean, the Albert character, could could be from a cultural group landing on our shores now, or trying to land on our shores now. So it's kind of interesting that this sort of story that I've been interested in has currency and is probably more relevant, because it's more in our day-to-day psyche.
Mm. What do you think really happens at the end?
I think at the end she smuggles them into her hotel room, her motel room, with the, you know, ratty fly screens and brown bedspread and all of that, and I think she, you know, hushes them up as much as she can to have a party, and probably goes out and plies her colleagues with alcohol so that they fall asleep early and don't notice. I'd like to think that she did that. Like, I'd really like to think that she finds it in herself to be happy that someone else is happy. Because I think when you're desperately unhappy as she is, it hurts to be around happy people, and that's kind of what's happening in that play. It hurts to be around Albert for her, because he's so happy despite his circumstances. And we don't know her backstory. We don't know why she's, you know, in that very dark, depressed kind of place that she is. But I would like to think that she finds it in her heart to be happy for someone else who's happy.
Mm. And is that then the transcendence?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is. I mean, because, you know, in 10 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever the length is, I mean, you know, you can't be Buddha. we can't really do Nirvana in 10 minutes. but I think what I can do is sort of, you know, we can kind of, she can find the door handle to Nirvana or something like that.
Mm. That first step.
Yeah. And I think the first step is often an attitudinal shift.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're looking in the right direction instead of the wrong direction. So it's a beginning, not an end for her.
Thanks for joining me for tonight's episode of Sonic Tales, where we share with you original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio. We really hope that you enjoy listening to Spirit, our feature play for this evening. But if you missed out, don't be alarmed. You can listen to the program again simply by visiting our website, eastsidefm.org/sonictales. Or you can easily subscribe to the Sonic Tales podcast on iTunes. I'd like to thank Donna Abella for being our guest on the show today and for sharing her important work with our project. Special thanks also goes to Alice Livingston and to Craig Minode. And of course, to our producer, Jill Folsom. My name is Tegan Nichols, and I've been your host for this evening, and I'll look forward to your company again in 2 weeks' time as we at Sonic Tales share another of our favourite original radio plays. Until then, take care and good night.